All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the podcast, The Performance Coach. And this is a very special episode. On the line with me is one of the most influential magicians of our time, performer, writer, teacher, coach, director, Jeff McBride. Welcome, Jeff.
Well, it's great. I'm here in Las Vegas, here at the Magic and Mystery School, and I know that a lot of your listeners are aware of my work, but for those of you that are new to magic or new to the history and mystery of magic, I know that before we went live here, you wanted me to give a little background, you know, of kind of what kind of magic I do. And if you're listening to this, you can always jump over to my website and catch some videos, some video clips on McBrideMagic.com and our Magic and Mystery School site. Some of the newer magicians that are out there might have seen me. I did a couple of episodes of Chris Angel's Mind Freak. I'm back east, so I know Chris from when he really got started. And Chris said he was really influenced by my style because my style was very theatrical. I worked a lot with masks and martial arts and kabuki theater. And so he had me on the show as one of his early influences in magic. I started most, you know, like a lot of young magicians start. Nowadays they get probably hooked on the internet or they see a YouTube clip. But you know, back when I was starting was books. I grew up in upstate New York in the Catskill Mountains in a little town called Rock Hill, New York, up where all the hotels were. And there wasn't really any magicians around there. So I started studying magic by going to the library. I wanted to be a rock and roll drummer. That's really my passion. I wanted to be a rock and roll drummer, yeah. And I got music books out, and right next to the music books in the library, the magic books. And you know, first thing I did was make that magic book disappear from the library. You know, I listened to what the instructions said. It said, never reveal your secrets. So I kind of made the book disappear for a while from the school. Started working on my magic act. And by the time I was in my teens, I had the opportunity to work for some rock bands. You know, that was what was going on. There wasn't a lot of places to do shows. So I had to create my own venues by going out to nightclubs and where people gathered where there was bands, and I would talk to bands into letting me go out and do you know, what I call a commando set, you know, out there fronting the band. So I was doing that in my teens, doing my magic show, and you know, it was pretty straight ahead magic show. You know, I got into the dub thing for a while, you know, did a dub act, and then I finally got picked up by a rock and roll promoter. And a guy that had a record label that handled Latin musicians called the Fania All-Stars. And he, this guy named Jerry Masucci, who was a friend of my dad's, and guy was an ex-cop and a record producer and knew my dad. And he was producing this big show in Japan, actually a tour. So I left school for a while, and I took my magic act down the road all over Asia. And that's where I really fell in love with martial arts and Japanese kabuki theater, put all of these different theatrical elements into my show. And I think that's what made my show different over the years, is that if you've seen my show or if you go see some of the clips of my show, it's all of the different theatrical elements that I blend into my show. It's not just about the magic. Today we see a lot of magic on the internet or TV, which is about the tricks. It's about fooling people with the tricks. It's getting the bottle cap in the bottle. It's about finding the signed card. It's about doing weird things or shock. But my magic, when I was developing, it was more about all of these other skill sets that I brought to the magic. There was working with masks. I always loved masks. I always loved, you know, martial arts, and I blended dance and martial arts and mime and music and rock and roll and all of these different theatrical elements into my magic act. And you know, I got to tour the world with it, and then it came back, moved to New York City, moved from the mountains, upstate New York, moved to New York City to do you know, rock and roll clubs and to study theater in New York. And while I was studying theater in New York, I got a job in a nightclub. A guy named Lou Lancaster, who's a great manipulator, you know, was kind of getting out of New York City for a while, and he handed me this gig in this nightclub called Club Ibis. It was one of the few nightclubs in New York. It was a really ritzy place. They paid really terribly. Remind me about how much they paid me later on. I'll tell you a funny story about that. But a manager named Bill Barnes saw me. He was Tennessee Williams' manager, writer Tennessee Williams.
Yep.
He took me under his wing, and we made a film, actually. Back in those days, we didn't have any video, but we made an actual film of my magic act, and we got that around to Diana Ross's people in Atlantic City. I was working down in Atlantic City doing some gigs in some of the hotels down there, and we got my video to the dresser, to Diana Ross's dresser, the person that helped her backstage, and while she was doing her makeup, the dresser put my video in the television set, and she watched it in the reflection. She said, "Who is that young magician?" She said, "Oh, it's Jeff McBride." She goes, "I'd like him to be my opening act." So then I opened for her at Radio City Music Hall for 1 week, and I got seen by like everybody in New York City. It was a huge concert at Radio City Music Hall. And I was doing MNIF, man. I'm doing card fans. And at Radio City Music Hall, I was the only person to do card fans since Cardini.
Wow.
Radio City Music Hall. It's the world's largest indoor proscenium theater. 6,000 seats. So I pull all of my stagecraft out, you know, the movement and the mime and the dance and the kabuki and the martial arts. And Steve Wynn sees me. Steve Wynn from Vegas, who's opening up the Golden Nugget, and he signs me to a couple-year contract, and I start doing all these opening acts and being like the house opening act at the Golden Nugget. And then from there I go to the Las Vegas Hilton, and I've been in Vegas, you know, on and off for 20 years. And you know, spend a lot of time on the road touring my show as well, and so that's kind of basically the history of my mystery, and you know how I kind of evolved all of these different theatrical elements, and I'm still learning new skill sets all the time. Like I'm doing like a whole new like Mach 3 version of the McBride Show now that has all these different elements in it that's been really influenced by my travels to fire festivals and art festivals like Burning Man Art Festival and Fires Rising and some of our Vegas Vortex events here. So I'm still learning, I'm still growing, I'm still combining magic. I think magic is like alchemy. You take all of these different rich ingredients and you blend them together and you transmute all of these base elements into something golden and wonderful and shining and brilliant to inspire people. And that's kind of my mission with our magic school, is to help, you know, take all of the life lessons and all the magic that I've learned and that I've, you know, it's been passed on to me from my mentors, like, you know, Sly Deeney and Eugene Berger and all of the people that are the faculty of the Magic and Mystery School, Max Maven and Bob Neal, and all of these great writers and performers and thinkers of magic have passed so much information on to us that we feel really honored. And it's a great privilege for us to work with, you know, all the new magicians, you know, in person and online, helping them with their show. And you know, I think that's what we have in common, is that we see other people's, you know, potential as a way for us to be able to express our magic through helping people achieve their dreams. Because I think people, you know, need to dream, and they need to be able to find people that can help coach them to achieve their dreams.
That's a very satisfying and fulfilling feeling to see a student achieve their vision.
Yeah. I've been working with, you know, just recently I just got back from Istanbul, right? And you have all of these young magicians in Turkey over there who just they're like some of their first gigs of these television shows that they're doing. The Uri Geller show is over there right now. The next Uri Geller, the kind of phenomenon show, he's been taking that on the road. And there's all these young magicians in Turkey now, and they're some of their very first big shows are television shows watched by millions and millions of people. And before this, you know, they were doing walk around in restaurants and doing what I call heads down, hands down magic. You know, kind of like all these like cuts and little double lifts and four ace productions.
Right.
Everything's at waist level. And the camera wants everything up at eye level. So I worked with these guys for a week, guys and women, for a week trying to get their stuff up into the camera. And once you see the transformation, just a simple shift of perception, like somebody taking the deck of cards that's down at their waist and bring it up in front of their face, and all of a sudden they're looking into the camera, and you see this entirely other type of magic start to take shape, and you'd be able to see the performer, these young performers' eyes meet the home viewer's eyes. Where 2 days before that, everything, you were just looking at the top of their forehead, and everybody was looking down. I think there's a huge major shift that's taking place right now because people, because especially young people, are getting a little bit more savvy that magic is more than that happens than below the wrist.
Yeah.
What I call heads down, old school, hands down magic is that when you're on camera, when you're in, you know, whether you're making a YouTube clip, you don't want your face in the shot. You know, I think you want, you know, unless you're DeVoe and you want to be the man of mystery and that's all cool. You know, but you know he's already doing that.
Yeah. Well, and for my listeners who have either studied with me or read my book Theatrical Magic, you know, they're performers who are primarily performing on stage, and when you're on that stage, you've really got to consider that fourth wall, that proscenium, like you would a television camera, and everything is up. You're playing to that back row all the time. And so that's a very similar experience, I would think.
Yeah, you got to play big. As Frank Garcia used to tell me, you got to play to the blind deaf lady in the back row.
Red Fox.
He's way back there when you're at Radio City Music Hall.
Yes, he is.
I 6,000 seats back.
Yeah, I had the privilege of meeting Red Fox, and I asked him what kind of advice he would give to a young performer, and he said, "Play to the cheap seats, kid."
And yeah.
So I've taken that with me. Well, let's talk a little bit about your new project. You're involved with Celebra Cadabra on VH1.
Yeah, I think that's what people are tuning into. I know that I think it's aired in some markets recently, and they're going to be airing all the episodes again and again and again as they do. And it's a real exciting time for magic. I mean, magic has crossed over into the big game of reality shows now.
Well, And I was thrilled to find out that you were involved with the project, being someone that is highly revered, but also you, as you described, you bring a level of substance and meaning and, you know, the fusion arts to your magic, something that a lot of people who are watching the show maybe aren't familiar with. They're used to the stereotypical tuxedo act magician. And you know, so when I found out that you were involved, I was thrilled because of that, and because of your reverence for the art and your love for the art and your desire to you know, protect the art.
The VH1 people, especially Chris Martin, who I worked with very closely, they were very, very, very careful in going into the show that they were going to really show the art of magic as being something that, A, can be learned, B, is challenging to learn, and that, C, it's a lot of fun to watch people not only achieve, you know, make good magic, but also, it's also entertaining to see people have conflict and challenge and occasional failure with the process. We forget that magic is theater, and part of that theater is the transformation that the character goes through from the beginning to the end of the play, the beginning to the end of the movie, the script. But there has to be some growth or transformation. And sometimes in the old school magic, you just see the magician come out on stage and he's just master of the material world for that 12-minute act, you know, that 12-minute stage act. And that's kind of boring. The master, you don't see any growth, you don't see any change. In my personal performances on stage, there are times when I'm challenged by my own magic, that I'm victimized by my own magic, that I have to, that I become trapped in my own magic. And that is what the VH1 people on Celebra Cadabra are showing, is the human drama of magic as kind of this interpersonal relationships between the coaches and the celebrities and the judges and the audience, that there's so much more to magic than just fooling somebody with a trick or shocking them with a trick and making them go wow. That the learning process of magic, that the creative process, that the challenge of performance of magic, all of this stuff is entertaining. above and beyond just the trick, that they went in this not wanting to expose tricks like old school, you know, magic shows like 10 years ago were all like...
Well, Jeff, you talked about magic as theater and the development of the characters, and I did get to see the first episode on the VH1 website. You can check out the very first episode of Celebracadabra. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was really taken by the fresh eyes of the celebrity contestants.
Right.
They, you know, they brought a freshness to magic, you know, not necessarily knowing how difficult magic can be. They were blank slates in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Was there, though, ever a period during the course of the show where there was a reversal of that, where they started to begin to realize, hey, good magic is hard work?
They knew that magic was hard work coming in. Let's put it this way. In the theater that they were working in the reality drama, what they were bringing into it was their pre-existing skills, which, remember, these people have achieved celebrity status because they are actors and comedians and entertainers. So they have stage charisma and improvisational theater techniques and chops and performance chops to get them out of, you know, tight situations above and beyond most magicians. Most magicians don't study theater. They don't study dance. They don't take improv classes. They don't take, you know, vocal coaching. They don't take fencing. They don't take, you know, elocution and vocal coaching. So these celebrities have so much theatrical savvy and theatrical chops going into this that if they can fake that they're a magician, they're way ahead of the rest of the pack. Magic is not about the trick. It's selling the experience. One of the great French magicians, Robert Houdin, is often quoted as saying a magician is an actor playing the part of a magician. But that's not the full quote. Todd Carr from The Miracle Factory is a French translator, and most English translations leave out one crucial word, and that's great, or grand illusionniste, that the magician is an actor playing the part of a great magician. So these actors on the show, these six actors on the show, some of them did it much better than others, but when they started to get it, capital I-T, was when they really understood that it wasn't about doing magic tricks. It was about taking their pre-existing skill sets, whether it was dance, rap, improv, comedy, music, script writing, drama, and all of these other things that they had studied for years that they'd become famous for. When they started to inject the theatrical elements into the magic, that's what made the huge difference, and that was the thing that separated the winners from the losers and the people that got cut from the show. The ones that stayed were the ones that were the best at integrating their pre-existing skill sets. Mm-hmm. And the ones that didn't do that got cut from the show.
That's fantastic. That's amazing to hear. Now, without revealing too much, do you think there were any of the celebrity contestants who would or may continue in the field of magic?
Well, there were some that were very obviously in it for the money.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, okay, gee, that's... And if they, you know, I think, I don't want to really give anything away here, so I'm kind of being a little bit cagey here, because I don't want to give any of the real mystery and suspense of this show away. But I'm going to boil it down to this. If a young magician decided that instead of the next year buying DVDs, they would put that same amount of money into going to a local community college improv theater class, the person would be a phenomenal magician, man or woman. The number one skill that made or broke the performances was adaptability in the present moment to be able to dance and flow with unforeseen situations that some people would call mistakes, but a savvy performer would call incredible improv chops. These are tools and skills that can be learned, just like you can learn a magic trick. But if you take a magic trick and something goes wrong, it's all about the trick. But if you take a magic trick and you have 10 years of improv theater experience behind you, it doesn't matter if the trick is wrong, because you can tap dance your way up the wall, across the ceiling, and down the other side of the wall. And that was the brilliance of some of these performances, was watching how they did not sweat when the tricks screwed up. And when it screwed up and they did sweat, you saw it, and those people will leave.
That's
you know, part of you know, it's like Robert Houdin. Part of the and we say this on the show, and this is what we teach our students here, whether the beginners, because we have a lot of beginner students come to us, you know,
right,
both on our online school and here in Las Vegas at you know, at the permanent school here in Vegas and on the road. And one of the things, if you can convince the audience that you're a magician, that's half the battle. But if you show that fear or insecurity, the audience can smell that. The audience can sense the insincerity or the insecurity and the ineptitude. So part of creating the illusion that you're doing magic is faking that you're a great magician. And some of these actors could do it better than others.
Well, now let's talk about that for just a moment. One of the things that I talk about with my students, and on the podcast we just had a discussion about this, is the my belief that it's really important to have a well-defined, intentional performance persona or a character. Do you think that these celebrities you mentioned, you know, they've gotten where they've gotten because of their skill sets and because of their work ethic?
Yeah.
And do you think that they came into it also just kind of knowing who they are as performers?
No, I thought they. I think they found their personas, and a lot of them changed their personas along the way. See, I'm gonna disagree with you. I think a young performer coming into magic working on one single persona is kind of a mistake. It's like walking into a costume shop where you have all of these different characters and archetypes and different costumes and masks and that you can wear and try out, and that you just go for one and you stick that one forever. And I think that when a magician is developing, a young magician is developing, is to try to experiment and to have a coach that can try on, okay, be a serious magician, be a comedy magician, be a hypnotizing magician, be a braggart magician, be a politician magician. One of our directors here at the Magic School, Tobias Beckwith, has a new book out called Beyond Deception, where he teaches these acting exercises that he does here at the Magic and Mystery School in his book, but have a coach that can experiment with you and dare to look silly, dare to push beyond your comfort zone. Yes, you will find a character that is stronger, but I do know that growing up that I had to wear a lot of masks and try on a lot of different personas before I found one that worked for me. And I stuck with that one for a long, long time, the white-faced character that I used to do many years ago. But really, it's when I started to change masks and to put on lots of different characters that I just really started to do to develop who I am, and that's the master of masks, is that I think a good actor can play many, many different roles. And you will see some of the actors, if you watch the show week after week, change their character. Sometimes they're silly. Sometimes they're talking. Sometimes they're serious. Sometimes they're, you know, they do something that's totally unexpected. And the ones that show the greatest range and the greatest versatility are the ones that go far. And the ones that stick to the one thing, they become one-trick ponies and boring because we don't see them develop. We don't see them change. We don't see them go through, the peaks and the valleys of the emotional theatrical experience that we crave all of these rising conflicts, all of these, you know, these kind of little battles and interpersonal relationships that the people are facing, not only with the audience, but with their coaches and other celebrity performers. That's what makes this thing dramatic. That's what makes this thing fun.
That's very interesting, very insightful. Now, here was a question that I had. Was there any point during the shooting, during the process, where the students, the celebrities, became the teachers and had something new to offer, something fresh to give their coaches that maybe the coaches came away with?
Well, you'll see sometimes, and you'll see this happen on the show, if you watch the show every week, you see the celebrities come in very insecure, and then they start really depending on the coaches. And then they begin to become clones of the coaches. And it becomes a contest of the coaches as much as it is a contest of the actors and celebrities. And we as judges start to notice this. And we start to call not only the coaches but the actors on kind of being just puppets. It's very interesting. And then as the season progresses, if you watch every episode, you'll see some of the performers rebel against their coaches. And at one point, some of the, you know, they kind of go in different directions and have varying differences of opinion where the performers are not listening to the coaches and just are going off into unexplored territory. And that's where it gets to be fantastic. Because the actors realize that the coach, you know, the idea, and this is what Eugene, who is our dean of the Magic and Mystery School and our master teacher here, says, the goal of a good teacher is to create students that transcend the teacher. And in this 8-episode ride, you actually get to see this dynamic played out. It's a microcosm of a much larger ride that usually takes, you know, 10 or 20 years. You're seeing this, like, this thing super accelerated, this learning curve super accelerated in just a few episodes.
We're back here with Jeff McBride, and we're talking about Celebracadabra and his involvement and his thoughts and his reflections on the experience. One of the things, Jeff, that I've been reading on online forums and reviews of the very first episode is some of the magic community's response to the very frank comments that the celebrity participants had about their coaches and about you and Franz as judges. Their first impressions were very frank. And do you think that some of the those comments have validity? Is that something that we should pay attention to? Are they vocalizing maybe some of the thoughts of lay people?
You know, I think they go for a lot of shock. They're going to say things that shock and upset. They're going to say things that are rude. They're, you know, a lot of the reality drama is based on kind of agitating and putting people into survival mode. So, you know, of course, sarcasm and little, you know, snotty remarks and little things are going to come up. But this is I think all part of the game. Psyching each other out, psyching, you know, the performers trying to psych each other out, the coaches trying to psych each other out, the, you know, coaches trying to psych the celebrities out. There's a lot of mental manipulation going on as well as physical manipulation as well, you know. So I think that, you're going to see more and more of this during the episode, but when these people start to get serious towards the ending episodes, a lot of that falls away, and it becomes about the magic.
That's interesting. A lot of folks have.
I think a lot of the performers and are hiding behind that Hollywood sarcasm.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of that coming out. You know, if I say something that's a little bit snotty or weird or funny, you know, that'll get airtime.
Yeah. Well,
you know, sincerity doesn't necessarily sell.
Well, along those lines, you know, Ant has already started out being very antagonistic, really trying to form alliances, psychic each other out. This is something that most magicians aren't used to seeing. We're taught coming up in magic that we're supposed to be, you know, polite and supportive and whatnot. Is there a place for that attitude, or is he completely out of line?
We'll have to see how it plays out for Ant, won't we?
Oh, and with that, we will wrap this up. Jeff, thank you so much for being with me and taking time out of your schedule to be a part of this podcast and to grant us this interview. You're one of my personal heroes. I look to you for a lot of inspiration, so this has been a personal thrill for me.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show, and see you on upcoming episodes.
Yes, yes. And where are you going next? What's next for Jeff McBride?
I'm going to be at the Orleans Hotel this week with Lance Burton and Eugene Berger for the World Magic Seminar. And I have a new show opening here in the fall in Las Vegas called Jeff McBride's Wonderground, an evening of magic, variety, and performance art that will be running here starting in September.
Sounds fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the modern masters of magic, Jeff McBride. Thanks again, Jeff.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.